Welcome to the Tales of Osteopathy students of me, Chelsea, and my good friend V. How are you doing, V?
Hello, friend. This is the fifth time that we're trying to record.
I don't even know.
We're poorly.
Again, apologies for my just general, you know, husky tones.
I mean, I love it. I feel like I'm in a blues club.
Feel like I should be like Phoebe and Friends, you know, which is that mouth sticky shoes.
Phoebe's the best one out of all of them.
Yeah.
I have strong feelings about this.
The best actual friend, as in friends who are like, you know, actually being a good friend, is Joey.
Yeah, for sure.
He's the best friend. Joey's He's got everyone's back all the time. He's completely honest about who he is, you know.
Yeah.
There's no holding back. He does everything he can to support his mates. Worst friend, Ross.
Yeah. Ross, actually find very irritating. Human. And I think if I had to, I would cut Ross out of the gang. Yeah,
he's just not a good person.
No, very complainy.
No. Just does a lot of stuff that makes him a douche, like, you know, pretending that him and Rachel actually got an annulment. Saying, like, moaning about the fact that his son had a Barbie doll.
Yeah.
You know, all this sort of stuff.
And
saying someone else's name when he's getting married to
so many
woman.
They were not on a break as well.
They were not on a break.
Firm stance on that. Firm.
Yeah. Anyway, osteopathy.
Yeah. You know that podcast of us called The Tales of Osteopathy Students? Hi, if this is your first time listening.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, we're not on the top form.
No.
Use your imagination that we're actually regularly quite delightful.
I mean, we're definitely delightful. I wouldn't say we're professional or, you know, high quality caliber.
No, I wouldn't.
But if you're new, welcome. It's very nice to meet you. Thank you for joining us on our rambles through this journey we take ourselves on.
This journey. I always feel like kind of cringe when I'm like, yes, I'm on a journey to becoming an osteopath. Because I'm like, man, I sound like a wanker, but it is a journey.
It is a journey.
Both mind, body and spirit.
And it's long. It's a long journey.
Yeah, but if you are new, because I think we do have quite a few new listeners. Hello, we've just started third year out of five of a part-time osteopathy course.
Yes, we've just had our first weekend of year three.
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah, got to see each other in the flesh.
Yeah.
Flesh is such a weird word, isn't it? So gross.
Flesh. Such a creeper.
Yeah.
That was so horrible. I apologise profusely.
Next thing you know, someone will say the M word, moist.
Oh, yeah, that.
Someone said that about a cake the other day, and I was like, get out, I'm not selling it to you anymore. You can't call something as beautiful as cake moist, you asshole.
Speaking of cake.
Oh, yeah.
Bake Off's back.
Oh, my gosh. I completely forgot that Bake Off was on.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
Who am I? I don't know. I love to judge people whilst they bake.
It's honestly, I'm so excited about it because it's like, you know, in the last couple of years, it's been all about the fucking drams where someone's fucked their cake up or someone else has dropped theirs or whatever else. It's not. It's back to the wholesome, everyday humans, you know, that are just baking and having a good time and all just love each other. It's great. Great.
That was Chelsea cracking up. Tears rolling down her face at the beauty of the Great British Bake Off. I love that people are watching this, like, it's really popular all around the world as well. And I'm like, what do they think we're like in England / Britain / the UK? Just, you know?
So some people think we're like that. Like, you know, all very like, oh, we bake cakes and we have a nice time and we're very prim and proper. Other countries, like generally Europe, think we're like drunken, absolute scumbags.
I can't lie. That sounds more true.
Anyways, we went to school at the weekend. Should we talk about school?
Yeah, let's talk about school.
We had all of our classes in person, which was so damn exciting. Absolutely loved it. Being sat in the classroom and, you know, sat down with a desk in front of me and a pen and piece of paper and a tutor up there. That I loved it.
It was delightful. I paid attention all weekend.
Same.
All weekend. Not a single little nap in class.
You loved your naps last year.
I just can't do sitting in the same desk at home with like 4-hour lectures.
Mm.
And they've, I really appreciate this, UCO, the switch around with our timetables, by the way, where we have ever so slightly shorter lectures and a slightly longer time at lunch. Suiting me very well.
Tasty McTaste. I very much enjoyed it. I really enjoyed having the... At first I thought, I was like, oh, we had 3.5 hours in between lectures. Mm. I was a bit like, oh, fuck, that's so long. But I actually really enjoyed it, of like having the space to be able to like go and practice what we wanted to practice, you know, with people. Because you think like we always go on about wanting more technique practice, but we all live so far away from each other.
Exactly.
Like the fact that we're already there, got to do it. Like, oh, well done, UCO. Very proud. That was good.
Top job. Which was your favourite class of the weekend?
Danny Church.
Oh, yeah.
Clinical pathology with Danny Church. He, oh my God, is incredible. Him also, Francesco, probably quite tired. Francesco with neurology, Danny Church with clinical pathology. Mm. It was just like the way Danny Church was talking about stuff. I'm like, yes, Danny. Yes. Ah, when it was even him just saying, if you don't understand something that I've taught you, you need to tell me because that's my fault and I need to change how I'm teaching you.
Mm.
And I was just like, yes, yes, amazing. And he gave a really good example about clinical significance, which I keep chatting to everyone about all the time because, you know, you get those things that stick in your head and you're like, oh, I've got to tell everyone about it. Which is, he was talking about, so what's the normal heart rate considered in the UK? Like 60 to 100 beats per minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying forever, his heart rate had been like 56, 58, something like that. And then he had COVID. And then after that, his heart rate was at 75 beats per minute. And it's like, what did his GP say? It's like, you're in the normal range. But that's not normal for him as a patient. That's quite a significant jump. So he was like, anything that's a change from the patient's norm is clinically significant. And I was like, yes. Francesco, amazing as well. Like, you can just tell he fucking knows everything. He doesn't need to go and read up about something before a lecture or whatever. He knows it. He embodies it. He knows everything. And I was just like, ah, incredible. So I just got so pumped with like meeting these new teachers that are obviously just amazing at what they do, like as an osteopath as well as a teacher. So yeah, I'm really excited. How about you? Who is your fave?
I think I was surprised with our techniques class with how not intimidating doing HVTs for the first time was. We did thoracic HVTs this weekend and it was not as intimidating as I thought it was, and I'm very happy about that because I was a little bit nervous about it because people had bigged it up quite a lot. Neurology was my favourite because, as you know, and anyone who's been listening for quite a while, I fucking love neuroanatomy. So it's definitely my favourite subject, and it just means that I get to spend more time learning about it and like refreshing and stuff like that. So really excited to do that because I love the brain.
Love that brain. Love it.
Love thy brain, hey?
Love thy brain, love thy nature. Yeah, something
like that. Love thy nature.
I'm rolling with it.
What are you drinking?
Many fluids.
The fluids. I'm there with you.
So I've got currently bringing back the Quedgley mint tea cake. Tea?
Yes, you told me.
So it's like black tea, mint tea. I found out what Quedgley mint cake is, by the way. It's basically like a sugar cube, but minty. In a nutshell, it's not cake as we know it. It's like a sugar cube but minty.
How disappointing. Don't promise cake
in
the name of something if it's not cake. Fucks me right off.
I know. How dare they? How dare they?
How?
I've had just absolutely smashed a lem sip. I've got water and coconut water as well.
You know you're truly, truly poorly when you're like smashing lem sips left, right and centre. I could actually gag at the smell. Just the faintest waft of a lem sip makes me heave a little bit.
Really? I love a lem sip. Like, Jack literally can't function unless he has lem sips in the house, which I've just had the last one, actually. So,
fisty cuffs. It's going to be fine.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed.
Yeah. You got any snacks?
No snacks for me. No, I had lunch not that long ago. I made myself a little dal, you know, something warm and nourishing and like...
I love a dal.
Make me feel better.
What's the one with spinach and potatoes called? I know that's not a dal.
Sagaloo.
That's the one. Oh, God, yeah. I really want an Indian now. It'd probably be quite good, actually. Fucking love sagaloo. Not with dairy, but a nice spicy Indian right now would probably be good for the old sinuses.
Helps clear it out. Clear it all out. Yeah. Yeah, I did have a curry last night, like a Kerala'an curry, which was really nice.
Yeah.
God,
I love curry.
It was very good.
The thing is, my favourite part about the curry is the pickles.
Yes. Yes.
The pickles and the naan bread and the sauce of the curry is my favourite thing.
Yeah, just basically give me a bowl of the sauce and the pickles and stuff to dip in it and I'm happy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
What have you got for drinks and snacks?
Well, I've been the most basic of bitches in terms of health. So I've got, you know, when you're just like, I'm going to drink everything that looks like it should be good for me, but probably works about like 1% in effectiveness.
Yeah.
So I've had like some ginger shot shit. Then I've added turmeric to orange juice and like pulpy orange juice. Like it's kicking orange juice. And then I got a kombucha because I do really love kombucha. I don't know how effective it is as a healthy thing. It's more for your gut, isn't it? But I've just realised, I was like, who's this handsome man on the bottle of the kombucha? It's Johnny Wilkinson.
Oh,
who's
crazy.
Apparently the founder of this kombucha company, which is very random.
There you go. Who knew?
Yeah.
Should we crack on and talk about some more endocrine organs?
Yeah.
If you want, dear listener, if you're feeling, you know, like you've just gone back to uni and you're still feeling like you're a bit excited, still a bit on the freshers week, and you want to play a drinking game along with this episode, hey, why don't you drink every time I cough or lose my voice or, you know, have to re-correct something or because I can't pronounce something correctly, you know, you can make it a fun game. That's what education's all about, right? That's
it. Yeah, that would be a good drinking game.
It would actually. Maybe we should do that. Anyway, we are starting, I'd say, roughly about the waistline of the body today. Roughly. Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to the episode before this, we highly recommend you do because we did.
Please do.
Well, Chelsea covered the first part of the endocrine organs and this is a continuation of that episode. So pause here.
Indeed.
Go back an episode, listen to that and then come back.
Yes, or if you really don't give a fuck about the thyroid, like you're not interested in it, or the hypothalamus, pituitary, pineal, then fuck it off. You can just go from here. We're good because we're in adrenal town to begin with.
Woo-hoo-hoo! The hats of the kidneys, I think you said the other day.
I did indeed, and I stand by it. I stand by it. Yes, adrenals, the hats of the kidneys, exactly. So they sit on top of each kidney and their name directly relates to their location, as in ad means near or at and renal being kidneys. So adrenals, isn't it magical? The anatomy of the adrenal glands is that there are two and they are triangular shaped organs and they measure roughly about 1.5 inches in height and 3 inches in length. So it's a flat triangle. It's a nice flat hat. And they've got two very distinct structures. So the outer part of the adrenal gland is called the adrenal cortex, and the inner region is known as the adrenal medulla. And each of them does very specific functions. So what's the function of the adrenal glands? So the function of the adrenal glands is essentially that they obviously secrete hormones. And the adrenal cortical hormones are always steroid hormones. So they're always made from cholesterol. And these particular hormones that they do is, first of all, some glucocorticoid.
It's a difficult word.
glucocorticoids. Hey.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. So first of all, hydrocortisone, a.k.a. cortisol. Buddy, old friend, old pal. Which regulates how the body converts fats, proteins, carbohydrates into energy. Very important. Very important. Nice. It also helps regulate blood pressure and cardiovascular function. Next, we've got corticosterone, and this hormone works with hydrocortisone to regulate immune response and suppress inflammatory reactions.
Ooh, nice one.
Then the next kind of little bracket is we've got mineral corticoids, which is first of all aldosterone, which maintains the right balance of salt and water while helping control blood pressure. The big old buddy, old pal, which is in the medulla, is adrenaline. Our friend adrenaline. Don't we love it? Nah. I mean, we do. It's very important. But so adrenaline rapidly responds to stress by increasing your heart rate and rushing blood to the muscles and the brain. It also spikes your blood sugar level and helping convert glycogen into glucose in the liver. Then you've also got its buddy pal, which is noradrenaline. And this hormone works with adrenaline in responding to stress. So it does the opposite in a nutshell. But it can cause vasoconstriction, which results in high blood pressure. Why does it result in high blood pressure, I hear you say? Because vasoconstriction constricts the blood vessels. Therefore, because the same volume of blood is flowing in a smaller, more compact space, the pressure is higher. Remember going back to some of our previous episodes where we're talking about those laws of physics and everything like that. So the pressure of something increases in a smaller space. Okay. Now looking at pathology. So there's a fair few things that can happen with the adrenal glands. So we're going to talk about a couple of these today. First of all, and we're doing them in alphabetical order because why not? We've got Addison's disease. So this is a really rare disorder which can affect anyone at any age. And it develops when the adrenal cortex fails to produce enough cortisol and aldosterone. Adrenal cancers, of course, can happen. And then we've also got Cushing's syndrome. And Cushing's syndrome, again, is very uncommon and is essentially the opposite of Addison's disease. And it's caused by an overproduction of cortisol. There are a variety of causes of this disorder. Sometimes a tumour on the adrenal glands or pituitary gland could be the reason. Another one that we've got is congenital adrenal hyperplasia. And this is a genetic disorder that is characterised by low levels of cortisol. It's common for people with congenital adrenal hyperplasia to have additional hormone problems such as low levels of aldosterone, which maintain the balance of water and salt within the body.
See.
That's our little adrenals, our little kidney hats, having a nice time, doing nice things.
I'll be going a little bit further into the adrenals next week when we do the HPA axis and the stress response.
Mmm, tasty. Shut up, Chelsea. Right. Another big dog of the endocrine system, which is a cheeky little cheekism because it's an endocrine and an exocrine gland, and it's our old friend the pancreas. And the pancreas,
clever little pancreas,
is a clever little bean, isn't it? So it lies very deep in the abdomen between the stomach and the spine. And it's connected to the duodenum, which is part of the small intestine. It's about 6 inches long and it's quite flat. Only about 5% of the pancreas is comprised of endocrine cells. And these cells are clustered in groups within the pancreas and they look like little islands when they're examined under a microscope.
Cute.
And so these are referred to as the islets of Langerhans.
Yes.
Which I just love the name of. I know we're supposed to be moving ourselves away from this nomenclature like culture of naming things after people, but islets of Langerhans is such a cool little name, isn't it?
It does stick in your head for sure.
Mm. Indeed. The pancreas carries out two like really important roles. We're mainly just going to focus on it in terms of an endocrine gland today, and we're not really going to go into its kind of full function in loads of detail, but just because, you know, we're sticking with the endocrine system at the moment. It makes digestive juices, which is, you know, its non-endocrine sort of function.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that in detail another day. The other bit that we're focusing on is the fact that it makes hormones that control your blood glucose levels. So the pancreas produces hormones in its endocrine cells, which we talked about, in those little islets of Langerhans, and they monitor what's happening in the blood. They can release hormones directly into the blood when necessary. In particular, they sense when glucose levels in the blood rise. As soon as this happens, the cells produce hormones, particularly insulin, and then insulin helps the body to lower the blood glucose levels and store the sugar away in fat, muscle, liver, and other body tissues where it can be used for energy when it's required. So the pancreas is really, really close to the stomach. And as soon as food is eaten, the pancreas releases these digestive enzymes into the bowel to break down the food, okay? But as a side note to that, as the food is digested and the nutrient levels in the blood rises, the pancreas then produces insulin to help the body store that glucose. Between the meals, the pancreas does not produce insulin, and this allows the body to gradually release stores of energy back into the blood as needed. Glucose levels generally remain very stable in the blood and at all times to ensure that the body has a steady supply of energy. This energy is needed for metabolism, exercise, and in particular to fuel the parts of the brain that run on glucose. And this makes sure that the body doesn't starve in between meals. So it's important that insulin's only released once we've eaten loads of food to help kind of process that, and not during the whole time. So we're just like, there's no blood sugar left. We got nothing. We can't do anything. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of the hormones that the pancreas releases. So we've got gastrin, and this is the hormone that aids digestion by stimulating certain cells in the stomach to produce acid. Glucagon, which helps insulin maintain normal blood glucose by working in the opposite way of insulin. It stimulates your cells to release glucose, and this raises your blood glucose levels. Insulin, as we've already said, regulates blood sugar glucose by allowing many of your body's cells to absorb and use glucose. In turn, this drops blood glucose levels. Somatostatin, which is when levels of other pancreatic hormones such as insulin and glucagon get too high. Somatostatin is secreted to maintain the balance of glucose and or salt in the blood.
Nice one.
And then vasoactive intestinal peptide. Oh!
Tasty. That's a big one.
Mm. So this hormone helps control water secretion and absorption from the intestines by stimulating the intestinal cells to release water and salts into the intestines. Said intestine a lot then.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we got that goes wrong with the pancreas? Lots.
Very important one.
Mm. So we got all the diabetes. We got type 1, we got type 2. We've got gestational diabetes too, which is like a temporary form of diabetes, which can happen when you're pregnant. Hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. So very rarely patients develop tumours in the islets of Langerhans, which is where they can then start overproducing or underproducing like certain hormones, but it's really, really rare. It's more likely for tumours to occur in the exocrine part of the gland, which is what is referred to as pancreatic cancer. We won't go into that today, but that's one of the things that's more likely. And the digestive cells within the pancreas can get a condition called as pancreatitis, inflammation of the pancreas. It's very painful and a very serious condition caused by the digestive enzymes leaking into the pancreas itself and damaging the delicate tissues around it. And then to the next one. Us humans that are born with female genitalia, or sometimes maybe not, maybe you don't have these still, but some people have these. And these are ovaries.
Woo. Woo, woo.
The source of all life. Our little ovaries, these are located on the opposite ends of the pelvic wall on either side of the uterus. And the ovaries are each attached to the fimbria. So these are the tissues that connects the ovaries to the fallopian tubes.
Are those the little finger-like projections?
Mm, yes.
It's almost like if you were holding a ball or an egg. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, so technically they're technically not attached to the fallopian tubes. They're like attached on the sides, but there's like ligaments that attach it to it, which kind of makes me wonder, I'm like, how those little eggs just going to float along, just going to get there. It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
That's clever.
So they're oval shaped and about the size of a large grape. In my head, that I always felt they were a lot bigger than that. I don't know why.
Yeah, so did I. I feel like when you get the stabbing cramp feel, it feels just like they're probably like the size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, straight up.
Because of the straight pain. Up. You're just like, yes, they must be very big to be making this much of a fuss.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The ovaries have got two main functions in the body. So they produce oocytes.
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 I love that word.
Which are little eggs for fertilization, and they also produce our best friend hormones, estrogen and progesterone, which I've never been able to say in my lives.
Lives?
Yeah, lives. Multiple.
Little
sure.
cat.
I am such a cat. I'm not going to go into the details of progesterone and estrogen now because V went through loads of it when we did the episode about the menstrual cycle. So I'd recommend going back and checking out that one if you'd like to know more about our friends. In terms of pathology, there's loads of shit.
So many.
So many things that can go on.
Many. And so under-researched.
Yes. So first of all, we've got PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is about 5 to 10% of people of childbearing age will have PCOS. It's important to know the difference between having cystic ovaries and also polycystic ovarian syndrome, because it's two different things. You can have cystic ovaries without having the full syndrome. So essentially what it is where the egg should be released, it's not, and turns into a little cyst, essentially, is what happens. You can have these cystic ovaries without kind of having any of the other symptoms of PCOS. Sometimes it's just the way that it is. But some people have it where they don't have periods for months. They have really high inflated levels of testosterone, things like that. That means you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome, essentially. And one of the things, not necessarily a pathology, worth noting, menopause. So I hate how this is described, but this is what it says. The ovaries naturally stop functioning at the time of menopause, just like that. And this occurs in most women around the age of 50. If it happens earlier, before the age of 40, it's called premature ovarian failure or premature ovarian insufficiency.
Failure, insufficiency.
Mm.
What a way to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Sorry. Failure and insufficiency.
Yeah.
I need to just...
Language and why that's important and why it should not be fucking called failure.
Yeah, or insufficiency.
So that's the ovaries, and now we're going to go over to their male counterparts, the testes.
Woo!
The testes, also known as testicles or male gonads, they lie behind the penis in a pouch of skin called the scrotum, if we didn't know that already. I'm sure we all did. So the testes move freely in the scrotum, but each testy is attached to the body wall by a thing called the spermatic cord, which passes through a cavity in the pelvis and into the abdomen. The cord contains several nerves and blood vessels for the testes, as well as the vas deferens, which carries the sperm from the testes into the urethra. So the vas deferens is what gets cut when men get the snip, essentially.
Baby snip. Also, you know the spermatic cord, and if it goes up into the abdomen... So when, like, males are talking about that, like, feeling where you're, like, on a very high building or something like that, or it's cold, and they're like, my balls have gone up into my stomach. Is that what that feeling is?
Yeah.
Like, the tension shortening on that spermatic cord?
Yeah, because basically the reason why they're outside the body is because the temperature, obviously, outside the body is lower than it is inside, and it's a more optimal temperature for sperm to be created, which is why when it's really hot, the scrotum kind of, like, releases a bit and gets, like, saggier, kind of flying around a bit more. And whereas when it's cold, it goes back up because it's...
On.
Yeah, literally. And when it's cold, it's, like, it's too cold, so it's, like, I've got to get closer to the body for more warmth so I can create my sperm proper. If only everyone could see my little nuzzling. just nuzzle back into that body. Outrageous.
Moving swiftly on from scrotum nuzzling.
So the testes have two functions. They produce sperm and they produce hormones. So particularly testosterone. So sperm are produced in the seminiferous tubules of the testes. There are about 7,000 of these tubes in each testy. Each is the length of an arm and the width of a few hairs.
Wow.
Shitloads going on in there. The whole collection of tubules is longer than a football pitch. Once the sperm are produced in the seminiferous tubules, they pass into the epididymis, a long coiled tube in which sperm mature as they are conveyed along it. They're then ready to be released at the ejaculation via the vas deferens.
Yeah.
Off they get.
Have a good journey, boys.
Enjoy. There's a few hormones that are created there. Some of them are interesting. So we've got testosterone, inhibin B, the anti-Müllerian hormone, as in Müllerian, like M-U with the umlaut, like the dots above the U.
Like Müller corner.
Yes.
There you go.
Exactly like that. And this one, which I haven't heard of before, which I'd be intrigued if you know about it, because I'd be intrigued to know, but insulin-like factor 3?
Oh, no, I don't know that.
What is that? Further research
required.
So that's
produced in the testes?
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
And estradiol. Pathology. So there's, again, a fair few things that can go on. in terms of... So the first one being, yeah, trauma, physical injury. So because they lie outside of the body, they're not protected, you know, by everything else. They're just kind of hanging around. There's no muscle, no bone protecting them at all. And it can cause really severe pain, bruising and swelling. So usually it's not too serious, but very rarely severe trauma can cause blood to leak into the scrotum. This is called testicular rupture. And surgery may be needed to repair the rupture.
Jeez.
Another form of injury is called twisted testicle or testicular torsion.
Oh, I had a patient who had, not a patient, but I had heard of a patient who had that.
One of my friends has had it. And this is when the spermatic cord becomes twisted from an injury to the testes or after strenuous activity. It happens more often in teenage boys. This torsion cuts off the blood supply to the testes, and this is a medical emergency and surgery is needed to untwist the cord to restore the blood supply and save the testy.
Because that's literal blue balls.
Literally. Literally. Again, lots of other things that can happen in terms of diseases that can affect the testes. So, you know, we've got male infertility, we've got testicular cancer that can happen, epididymitis, which is an infection of the epididymis caused by a general infection, tuberculosis or sexually transmitted illnesses such as chlamydia. I wonder if this is what affects the testicles in the mumps.
Ah, yeah.
I had the mumps.
Did you?
Yeah.
God, you're a hot mess, you are.
There was an outbreak in my hometown when I was 16, 17. And it was like between, I think it was people aged between sort of 14 and 21, it was like 25% of us got the mumps.
Oh, shit.
I've already lived through an epidemic. Dumb one. The mumps is fucking shit, but it's way worse for boys than it is for girls. So those with male genitalia than it is with those with female genitalia, should I say, because your testicles swell. And also, one other thing that can happen is cryptorchidism, which is failure of one or both testes to drop down in the scrotum before birth, so they remain in the abdominal space. And this can harm normal development and function of the testes and lead to infertility, of course, because the reason they're on the outside is because better temperature to produce sperm. Infants are often treated with an operation to bring the undescended testes into the scrotum. And there we are. We made it.
Oh. Woo! Well done, Chel.
So ill. So ill.
Chelsea will have very cleverly edited out her multiple near-death experiences with coughing to death.
Indeed, indeed. And I hope this was as useful as the last one.
If you would like to let us know what you thought about this episode or any of our other ones, or if you have any subjects you'd like us to cover, please let us know by emailing us at TTOSpodcast@gmail.com. And please stay tuned for many, many more episodes related to anatomy and physiology of the endocrine system, fun medical stories, chats about our studies and mental health, and so many more. And you can follow along our journey on our social medias too, which are at TTOSpodcast. And we would love to hear from you if you want to send us a little message and say hello.
Yes, we'd love do. That. Yeah, we love chatting. Love having a little chat. So do get in touch. Send us all the things. Thanks for listening. We'll see you when I Thank sound you. Like a normal human again.
Love you, bye.
Bye.